Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Friday, 19th of March, 2021. Pretty ugly day for equity markets yesterday. We've talked about how the FOMC seemed to be waving the flashing the green light, if you will, as much as it possibly could, and indicating it's not going to push back against the economy or inflation in any way. Of course, a positive message on the headline, but the problem is with the entire U.S. yield curve at the long end. Lifting quite aggressively, this is pushing back the other way. And so we saw a pretty broad market sell-off all the way down to microcaps in terms of breadth. And the NASDAQ 100 we've talked about before, so interest rate sensitive and seeing a pretty ugly day yesterday. And we have this on slide two in this the 61.8% retracement, a classic Fibonacci retracement level you would look for in a major market turnaround to provide resistance. It did that in recent days. And we saw the sell-off picking up quite heavily yesterday. The next little level there would be actually then the 61.8% retracement of the rally itself off those 12,200 area lows, which comes in around 12,615. So keep that in mind. It depends on whether you're trading the June future or the QQQs, of course, or some other future here, so just or index here, so just be careful which version of the NASDAQ 100 you're trading for actual levels. Peter, it is all about interest rate sensitivity. We're seeing a bit of a bid coming in here in Europe, early Europe this morning. I'm not sure exactly why. It was a pretty downbeat session in China as well. Those U.S.-China talks getting off to a really ugly start with a lot of bickering, as Bloomberg called it. I don't know, maybe the AstraZeneca news on the margin adding a bit of positivity, and the European equities have just been doing better anyway. AstraZeneca vaccines to resume, at least in Germany and France, and I think there was Indonesia overnight as well. Take us through your thoughts here. Are we, is energy picking up for even further sell-offs in your view, or do you think things might stabilize, or do you have any opinion on that?
Well, European equities, I'm not sure it's that bit. I mean, the DAX index is down 0.7% this morning. You could argue that the underperformance relative to the US has been less. And that is actually the story so far this year, that European equities have done quite well. And so I think that's part of the rotation that is going on in equities into cyclical parts of the market. The miners, energy companies, value stocks in general is benefiting. So, and we've been saying that. So Europe is looking okay. Although the whole vaccine thing, I mean, it's very rarely that I'm on the same page as Mr. Krugman, the famous economist. Don't know what's his real actually famous
or infamous, depending on your point of view.
Yeah, exactly. But he actually wrote an op-ed the other day about the catastrophe of the European vaccination rollout, and I think he touched on a very important point about European politicians being so risk averse, but risk averse of the wrong thing. So they were so afraid of being looked at as having overpaid to U.S. pharmaceutical companies that they stuck to cheap ones, and it's been an entire mess. But it's actually a good read, so you can read that if you want some Krugman for your daily coffee. I will quickly go to slide three, John, because extending on what you said, I think I've actually changed my interest rate sensitivity slide. So before I've had both the green and blue dots, if you look at the slide deck from yesterday, but now I've taken the spread. And I think actually, if you take the spread in the 10-day rolling average return between bubble stocks and S&P 500, I think actually the interest rate sensitivity and the convexity in it actually becomes quite clear. You can see that. And I think the interest rate sensitivity was actually at full display yesterday. So look at the table on performance on the right-hand side of the slide. I mean, 4% decline for bubble stocks, down almost 10% now for the month, 5% decline in biotech stocks, down 6% for the month. Green transformation was down. I mean, it's just all the things that we have been pointing out being interest rate sensitive, at least here when you're coming off extremely low rates, have been doing exactly that. And I think as Steen mentioned in our internal call, I mean, if you look across the divergence just on the year-to-date performance between travel stocks and green transformation, it's a 30 percentage point divergence, but also divergence yesterday and especially this month, you can see that the things that are going on in the market is confusing investors, and they don't really know how to react to it. And that creates, I think, a lot of opportunities, both for traders, but also for investors. A lot of things are being repriced.
Yeah, and I want to get to actually along those lines, I mean, some huge moves and very important moves in the crude oil market, and then talk about gold and this interest rate sensitivity and inflation fears with you, Ole, in a minute. But I just, we got to get to this Volkswagen story. I find this fascinating. a situation that just should not arise by any, any basic sense of logic in what's going on here. Take us through what the heck is going on with Volkswagen and the difference between these common and preferred shares, and why the spread has blown out, and if that's an opportunity, if a risky one for some kind of arbitrage.
Yeah, I don't know why it is that Volkswagen always end up in these situations, because we had the epic, probably one of the biggest short squeezes of all time, more than 10 years ago. I think it was in 2007 when Volkswagen at one point became the biggest company in the world. You have A and B shares for Royal Dutch Shell. You also have A and B shares for Maersk, the biggest shipping companies. And then Volkswagen is operating with ordinary and preference shares. The preference shares are actually the primary share where the most of the liquidity is, and the one that has actually been adopted in the benchmark index in Germany, the DAX index. As you can see on slide 4, the price of the ordinary and the preference shares, they typically follow each other. There's a very tight spread between those two, as they should, because they basically reflect the same underlying economic reward if you buy them, basically. But as you can see here, so starting from March 8, there's just been a huge blowout in performance for the ordinary share versus the preference shares. Especially yesterday, you have the preference shares down, but the ordinary is still blowing out. My thesis,
so the illiquid, just to get it straight for listeners, it's the, yes, the less liquid, it's a less liquid share that's probably showing up first, you were saying, on their search function, exactly. that is blowing out, and the actually more liquid one that's relevant for institutional level investors is the preferred share, and it's half the price.
Exactly. So my best guess or my hypothesis is here that the volume going into the ordinary share far exceeds the underlying liquidity, and that is pushing prices significantly away from the preference. And this is my hypothesis. I think it's driven by U.S. retail traders that are reading these headlines. We've been writing about it ourselves, that Volkswagen is coming after Tesla. Tesla has been weak. Everyone is looking at Volkswagen and say, okay, maybe they can actually become the biggest EV company in the world. And If you just do a normal autocomplete search on a trading system and you type in Volkswagen or VOW, you'll get the VOW, which is the ordinary ticker. You'll get that first and not the VOW3, which is the preference and the primary and the most liquid ticker. So unless Robinhood and the other trading systems, they don't have these special meta labels or metadata that can actually distinguish between these two, you'll get the wrong ticker up. I think that's the only thing that can explain this. And as you said, John, why do you have this spread? It's a huge arbitrage opportunity. We'll see when it gets closed, but it's there, that's for sure.
All right, a fascinating story. And at some point that'll slam shut, but of course it could go anywhere in the interim, just like those that thought they could gauge where GameStop could or could not go, I suppose, from the market making side when all the options buying was happening. All right, let's get over to you, Ole. We have to talk about oil. Obviously, a gigantic move yesterday. It was moving on the order of $5 per barrel and more. What's going on? Did it just stop loss trading, or is this something more afoot here?
Well, I think it was something that has been brewing for a little while now, and something that we have been talking about. This basically, if you look at on slide 7 here, on the right hand side, you can see the weekly accumulation of positions held by money managers, so called speculative position. And while the crude oil price continued to surge higher, rising by around 12% during the previous 4 weeks up until I think it was March 9, there was actually no net change in the net long. So basically, even though price were going up, speculators starting to pull back, starting to get a little bit more hesitant. Part of that story is clearly the continued rally we've seen in bond yields, which is raising lifting volatility and raising risk adversity. And that obviously came into full force yesterday, as following the FOMC meeting, a big spike in yields. We had an IEA report the other day, which we talked about yesterday. It's basically highlighting that the short-term outlook is not great. There's no super cycle coming in oil anytime soon. And the combination of all these just tipped it over the edge. We broke 66.50 on Brent, and the floodgates opened. And then we have found some support here around the 62 level. So I think if we can close above 62, we probably threw the worst bit. But the we definitely need to keep an eye on stock markets and the bond yields today, because this is a paper investment driven market, i.e. a speculative driven market. And that basically means if you are a money manager and you are watching your volatility continue to go up, you have to cut your exposure, and that is not done in a day. That will take several days. So really, it all depends on whether we can find some support here that I'll say around that 62 level.
All right. And then really important, as we're getting all these signs of inflation coming in, concerns that inflation is coming in, and that even the Fed's ability to keep its policy rate as low as they say they're going to, or forecasting that they're going to, will not hold. I'll talk about that in a second. But really what you've been noting in recent days is the gold outperformance relative to some of these yield moves. Just specifically one inflation data point that came in yesterday, we had that March Philly Fed survey. Registered a reading of 51.8. That's the highest reading almost in my lifetime, or in my lifetime since 1973. This is staggering stuff. Of course, it's based on a comeback from a terrible pandemic, but still, the price is paid, hitting 75.9, the highest reading on this diffusion index since 1980. So take us through your thoughts on gold and where it starts to not just look resilient, but sort of triggering some outright, decisive move higher.
Well, the FOMC meeting the other day triggered clearly a lot of fresh focus on inflation and the fact that the FOMC is just going to stand back, allow it to potentially run wild in the short term, even though they don't see it themselves. But I think all the price action we're seeing around the world just points to higher price pressures over the coming months. But so gold spiked initially, but as yields continued to move higher, it started to come up and come trade lower. But then since it found a bit, and you can just see on this this insert here on slide 8, basically just highlighting the price movement in gold and real yields, US 10-year real yields during the past 11 days. And when we last time was testing these negative 60 basis points, 62 basis points where we are now right now, gold was basically $60 lower than where we are right now. So that we also have to remember during the past week, the dollar is trading almost unchanged. So it's not an input from a weaker dollar that has done this. So we are potentially seeing gold starting to rediscover its reflation credentials. In order for that really to get some legs is really a break above 1765, as you can see here on the chart. What's helping gold, which is not helping oil and some of the other commodities, is the fact it's really unloved right now. We've seen 30 days of ETF selling. We got the speculative net long held by funds down 85% from the highest last year. So it's an unloved market with plenty of space if we should see some fresh momentum coming into the market.
All right, interesting stuff, especially the technicals break back higher against the dollar. And let's just rewind a little bit. The thing, of course, prompting a lot of uncertainty yesterday, despite the accommodative Fed, were the long yields rising once again, and quite sharply so. We saw, as you can see on slide 5, the 10-year Treasury benchmark hitting 1.75%, almost exactly there is where it found resistance. And we saw a bit of support coming into the bond market, quite a bit back lower on yields today. And the other interesting thing to me being that even at the shorter end and, all the way down to where people are gauging Fed liftoff, we see, as you see the smaller chart on the lower right, the December 2022 Eurodollar short-term interest rate future, so the three-month rate predicted for December of next year, reacted quite strongly to the dovish Fed, but then unwound all of that and more at one point yesterday. It's sort of back to mid-range now, but still just the market I think being led to believe that it's really going to be up to the economy and inflation to tell you where the Fed eventually does lift off, and that if inflation pressures are sufficiently high, the Fed will have to lift off before that 2024 date. Regardless, we need to continue to track yields in the U.S., and we need to track central banks, of course. Bank of England out yesterday, kind of copying the Fed's attitude on longer rates, not showing any signs of stress there. There was no real reaction in sterling. Bank of Japan expectations were a bit more profound, obviously, because they had promised a policy review that was pretty much a damp squib, this policy review, only saying that they're going to allow the 10-year JGB yield to fluctuate 25 basis points on either side of zero. As dovish as the market expects the Bank of Japan to be, this actually sounded slightly hawkish, and given the risk off and those yields being tamed since yesterday's highs, it's allowed yen to push back stronger. I think this commodity sell-off certainly in oil also helping the Japanese yen higher. And I think if we are to see a little bit of a yen consolidation or more, and yields tamed for a bit here, the Euro-yen chart looks quite interesting, as I'm showing on slide six, that a pretty solid reversal from the new highs. And you see on the momentum that the MACD is starting to turn around. Could be an interesting one. You've got a nice candlestick to provide the risk metrics for a potential run lower there. And you see on the trend evolution chart from the FX board on the right there that we show pretty much daily, everything is just about, not everything, but most trend development here is about a weakening of prior trends. So for example, the Swiss franc downtrend has been sort of weakening. The same a little bit, and to the degree, lesser degree, the Japanese yen downtrend, the Nokkei uptrend. Interesting, yesterday they signaled that potential for a September liftoff for the Norwegian central bank rate hikes, but then you get a $5 crude oil sell off, and you can see what's controlling the relationship there. It's more crude oil than a potential rate hike in September, and Nokkei actually sold off again. Interesting developments in EM as well. Turkey getting more credibility by hiking 200 basis points all the way to 19% on their policy rate. That move higher in the tri is sticking better than the more modest surprise for the Brazilian central bank, which raised rates slightly more than expected after the Brazilian real had reached the lows of the cycle against the dollar. And we have the Russian central bank up today, not expected to move, but I think needs to signal rate hikes that it has already signaled, and to do so quite strongly to keep the ruble from selling off more here, especially given this crude oil move. I think that's about all I wanted to talk about before I get to the calendar later, but a brief wrap up on other developments in commodities before we get to back to Peter.
Yeah, just that led by the oil markets. It's the worst week for commodities since October. I just put in the insert on slide 9, where you can see the performance during the past week. Weakness led by energy, as we said, especially gasoline and oil. And if we are seeing this vaccine rollout starting to disappoint, it will obviously delay the recovery in demand, thereby applying forces pressure on OPEC Plus to continue to keep production tight, and that. It may be taken as a bit of a negative piece of news, but generally what's at stake here in the short term is the market's ability to recover or to stabilize, because just look on the right-hand side, that's a weekly update on the speculative interest. We got a record long across the market, and it's also a reason why yesterday when oil was coming off, something like the grain market was coming off as well, even though there's no movements in the dollar, and that just highlights it's a question of how much risk adversity we're going to see come into the market, and thereby also how much that could trigger in terms of reducing positions across these markets. So interesting one into next week.
All right. Also interesting, Peter, were yesterday's FedEx earnings. I mean, FedEx has just been supercharged by the whole pandemic and the consequent supercharging in online shopping, which means a heck of a lot of package delivery. So take us through that and also Nike.
Yeah, so FedEx had a blowout quarter, basically, as some of the headlines here from the various financial news indicate, unprecedented holiday shipping season. Prices remain elevated. They say they expect prices to remain elevated, especially for their express last mile delivery, for at least the next 12 months. So, I mean, I think that's a very bullish outlook to their prices. They also expect a growth in revenue per package in their entire business to be up over the next 12 months. There's higher maintenance cost and also labor cost pressures coming into FedEx. And then they have a comment which I think is interesting. I'll be writing a little bit about that because it relates to e-commerce stocks, which have been one of the best performing over the past year. And that is that FedEx is seeing a short-term deceleration of online sales. So I think given US is a little bit ahead of Europe, I think these are early signs in the US that as you open up in society, consumers, they're not fully reversing Of course not, but they are reversing some of their consumer patterns and consumer spending behavior, I think so that is potentially two negative catalysts for e-commerce stocks over the next 12 months: continued higher and accelerating price on the last mile delivery and general logistic costs, combined with a deceleration in revenue growth rate. So depending on how aggressive you have been in your investments as an e-commerce stock, that could be a little bit of a hangover period for the next 12 months. And then we also had Nike reporting yesterday, and that was, you know, very mixed. They were showing okay, decent improvement on their margin sides. Sales were weaker than expected, actually quite weak relative to expectations, and then they were complaining about supply constraints, especially U.S. port congestions that are impacting their ability to get goods moving from Asia, that's where they're produced, and then to the ports in California, and then from there into the inland of the U.S. So I think those two earnings releases actually carried some interesting information, especially the FedEx.
Yeah, and on the macro calendar, there's almost nothing today worth mentioning. The Russian key rate announcement later, as indicated. One of the things that really interested me was another print, weak print, because we had a pretty positive print, 700K on the initial jobless claims the prior week. Then that rose back to 770,000 last week. So why this thing needs to be improving and rapidly towards 500K? Is this a sign that the opening up is not bringing back these some of these lower quality service jobs, not lower quality, but lower paying service jobs, because new automation, a new attitude towards automation or other has happened in the economy? Is it the benefits and the stimulus checks that are preventing people from wanting to seek lower paying jobs? What is it? I think it's one of the structural things that we need answered and rapidly in coming weeks, if this this jobless claims figure is not dropping like a stone. So I'll be looking for that next weekend and following weeks. I just want to round that up from yesterday. It was an odd sort of bad note, and otherwise some of the other superheated data like that Philly Fed. And then next week, there's plenty to distract us, and we've got tons of central bank speakers out that I've not even put on here, all of them on here. But on Thursday, Claire Dowd speaking. He tends to be a prominent voice in forward guidance for the Fed. Chinese rate announcement, nothing expected there on Monday. And then the week rounds out with the February PCE inflation, which gets increasingly interesting for the month-on-month figures, and then eventually into the March and April, the year-on-year figures as well. So, yeah, let's see where the markets take us today after a pretty strong sell-off and yesterday, and whether this follows through into a nervous weekend or we get some sense of support coming into the market as yields pressures possibly ease today. We'll see where it stands. Have a great weekend. Stay careful out there, and we'll be back Monday with the Saxo Market Call. Thanks for joining.